Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Well, we all get a kick out of looking at old pictures of our folks and their friends so that we can pass merciless judgment on the way they dressed and the things that they were doing in those old photographs. But sometimes you find old photographs that have a lot more significance, not just to a family, but to an entire community. On the phone with us this morning is Joan Glanton Howard. She's the daughter of photographer John Glanton, and a brand new book has just been released called Double Exposure, Images of Black Minnesota in the 1940s. Joan, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning.
And I'm sure you don't miss at all moving to Nevada when you listen to that forecast.
You're absolutely correct. No, I don't.
Joan, tell us about this box of photographs. It's always such a treat when we get to hear about something that folks had forgotten all about, and then it's found in some offhand place, in a box, in an attic, in a garage, and all of a sudden there's magic. Tell us about that.
Well, my father passed away several years ago, and my cousin, who lived next door to my parents, was helping my brother clean out the garage, and she found a bag full of old negatives in the garage. And it was literally a brown paper bag full of old negatives with twigs and leaves in it. And so she took the bag to her house, and she kept them, I don't know, for several years. And then her brother-in-law was working with the folks at the Hennepin County Library Special Collections Unit on a project that his family was doing with them about some things that his father had done about black Minnesotans in the 60s and 70s. So anyway, she gave the bag to Anthony Scott, who in turn kept them for a while. And then he happened to ask Ed Hathaway at the library, I have a bag full of negatives that came out of my uncle-in-law's garage. Would you all be interested in looking at them? And so to make a long story short, Anthony gave Ted the photos, and he and the library staff started cleaning them up. And lo and behold, we had a whole treasure trove of negatives. And I don't know exactly how many negatives were in the box, but they were able to restore about 800 photographs. And from those, they selected the ones that appear in the book on Double Exposure.
Well, and we were lucky enough to have Anthony Scott as a guest on the show a few months back talking about the Scott collection. And so that was fun to realize that the projects were connected. You do realize, don't you, that if this bag of negatives had been found in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, that they probably would have been discarded, and that it's only now with the magical ways that we can retouch photographs and that we can restore negatives that the technology was able to restore these photographs?
No, I had no idea.
I mean, I'm guessing that somebody would have said, oh, these are all scratched up, they'll make crappy prints, and they might have just junked them.
You know, you're probably right, because in the book, Ted talks about the process he used to restore the photos, and it sounded like it was rather complicated, so they may not have had the technology back in the 70s and the 60s, you know, if we had come across them then.
And they might have, and, you know, or your, and your dad would have said, oh, that's just garbage now. Throw it, dads, you know, dads, kind of curmudgeonly.
Right. Yeah, throw it out. We don't need it.
That's probably why they were in the garage, you know, when you think about it.
Exactly. What a magical, and the photographs are stunning. There's a little, you know, some little disclaimer about, you know, the photographs weren't stored well in there, whatever, but they look like they were just, I mean, except for obviously the clothes that people are wearing, and you can maybe tell a little bit, you know, that the photos are older, but they're beautifully restored. So tell me about growing up with your dad taking pictures of the community. Little kids, of course, have a different sense of that. Was that just, dad runs around with a camera and he takes pictures of people?
Okay, this is the thing about this whole situation that's very, very ironic. When I was growing up, my father did not take photographs other than family pictures. And if you were to talk to my sisters and brothers and I, we knew our father as a piano player. He was a musician. And so as a child, we knew that he was a civil engineer, and he built roads and designed bridges for the city of Minneapolis, and he played the piano. And the photos are from 1945 till about 1950 or 51. Because if you look, you'll notice that I'm the only one. I have four siblings, two brothers and two sisters. I'm the only one that's in the photos because in around 1951 he stopped taking photographs.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, and of course, then you find the photos in the garage after your dad is gone, and the quest,
yes.
And then the questions that you want to ask, you can't find the answers to.
Exactly.
How heartbreaking for you.
Right. I know. I have an uncle who's going to be 97 this year. And so, of course, we talked to him about, you know, the whole the idea of Daddy being a photographer. And he was saying that after World War II, he worked for the Spokesman newspaper for Cecil Newman, and that's where the photos came from, a lot of them, as his job as a photographer with the Spokesman. But I'm pretty sure he went to school under the GI Bill, and so I'm pretty sure he was getting his degree in engineering or working on his education when he was doing the photography. And so then once he started out as a draftsman, and then once he went on with that aspect of his life, I think he just gave up the photography.
Well, and photography at that time was a lot more work. You needed to be a lot better at it in order to get good photos. Of course, the technology has advanced now so that kind of any schmuck can get good photos, and is one of those schmucks, I can say that. And, of course, then the cost of developing film and some of these other things. But isn't it fabulous when you find things out about your folks that you didn't know, you know, hidden depths, and they kind of become more of a person?
Absolutely. And it has been such a blessing. I can tell you a little interesting story about the photographs. I have a girlfriend. She and I are very, very close, and I was showing her the book. And we're going through the pages of the book, and we come across a picture that's toward the back of the book of my father's band when he was in the military. He was stationed in the South Pacific, and one of the things he did is he put together a group of gentlemen, and they had a band that played and entertained the troops. And as we're looking at the picture, she said to me, "My father-in-law's a trumpet player."
Wow.
And we looked at each other, and the sad thing about it is they both passed away, but it turns out that her father-in-law played in my father's band in World War II that he had put together in the South Pacific during the, you know, where they were stationed, at the base they were stationed in.
This has got to be an amazing gift for people in the community. Not only people who say, oh, my gosh, there's a picture of my mom, my dad, my aunt, my uncle, you know, now who can maybe contact and say, can I please get a copy of this photograph? But what do you think this, what have you heard? What does this book mean to the communities where your dad was taking those photos?
People have a lot of pride in the pictures, and they feel... How do I want to? I'm trying to think of the right words, but they're very proud of the way it depicts a snapshot of African American life in Minneapolis and St. Paul during that time, and you know it shows a I'm trying to think of the right words. It shows a full picture of what people were doing. Like you have the photos of folks playing golf, and you have, you know, the Aquatennial Parade and things. And it shows that, you know, people had a rich and very full life. And the folks at the library had viewing sessions to identify people that were in the photos. And you could just tell from watching the people go through the photos and see who they could find and so on and so forth, that they just felt like it was a depiction of a time in their lives where, you know, it was fun and exciting and they were young and they just really enjoyed going back there and recollecting those memories and things.
I had run across some information recently that I was not aware of, that mm-hmm. in much of the last century and before, African American lives were really only depicted in certain ways that matched the white stereotype, that fell into line with a white stereotype. And so it was really important. It was, you never saw movies or photographs, or you rarely saw outside of those communities, you rarely saw black people at work, black people playing golf, black people, you know, just living everyday, multifaceted lives. It seems as though the dominant culture only got little bitty, kind of carefully curated snapshots. And so it was hard to picture, you know, to say, oh, these are people just, you know, they're doing the same stuff that we're doing. That kind of exposure just wasn't really there.
Well, you know, I had never really thought about it, but I do believe that you're right. And that's one of the good things about the book, is that you do have African-American people in doing ordinary things, christenings, weddings, you know, out on the town, playing golf. There's a couple of pictures of, several pictures of athletic clubs that the settlement houses had, Hallie Q. Brown, and for example, and the photos just show, you know, people just living their lives in a very normal, you know, fashion, just like everyone else in the country. And I guess they are unique from that perspective. I guess I'd never thought about it like that. But they, you know, they show people just doing ordinary things.
And maybe if we had the opportunity to get glimpses into people's ordinary lives more often, maybe that's one of the good things, maybe, that can come from social media, is that we get to see all kinds of different people that perhaps we'd not meet in person doing everyday things, you know, shopping for groceries and going to work and that sort of thing. And maybe that can help to break down some of those barriers between people. I don't know. Joan, go ahead, please.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I think you're right. Because one of the things, I'm just happen to be thumbing through the book as I'm speaking with you, and it just shows ordinary people doing ordinary things. You know, nothing really unique, cotillions and weddings and beauty pageants and, you know, just things that people in communities do, and I think that's a good aspect of the book.
Joan, one last thing. Do you feel like you have enough pictures of your dad, or was he always the guy behind the camera?
Oh, he was always the guy behind the camera.
So do you regret not having more pictures of him?
Yes. Yes.
I want to just make a little shout out to the people who always say they don't want to be in the pictures, they don't like the way they're photographed or whatever. Nobody cares. When you're gone, the people who love you want to see your picture.
Yes, that is very, very true.
So the next time you're going to make a stink about, I don't want to be in the picture, don't look at it then. The people who love you want to look at it.
Right. Yes.
Joan, thank you so very much for joining us this morning, and what a fabulous discovery, and how wonderful of your family to share this treasure trove with the rest of the world. Thanks so much for being our guest.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you for your interest in the book.
Oh, it's wonderful. Joan Glanton Howard joined us this morning. She's the daughter of photographer John Glanton, and a collection of his photographs, Lost Images, has been published, collected together in a book and published. It's marvelous. It's called Double Exposure, Images of Black Minnesota in the 1940s. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.